Arvind ki jai. Namacharya Shiva Haridas Thakur ki jai. Prem Shiva Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Go Gopinath Shyamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan ki jai. Vrindavan Dhamma ki jai. Mathura Dhamma ki jai. Navadvipa Mayapur Dhamma ki jai. Jagannath Puri Dhamma ki jai. Gangamaya Jamuna Devi ki jai. Bhakti Devi ki jai. Tulsi Maharani ki jai. Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Gaur Premananda. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Sai Buddhalashri Mati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Ajinamani. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvasesis and Nivadi Paskachadi Satani. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Guru and Vaishnavam Sri Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Padijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Sta Panchakalpa Jivishta Kipasindavata Padijanam Pavanevio Vaishnavivam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
September 25th, 2019, in Hillsborough, North Carolina, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 11, The Childhood Pastimes of Krishna, Text 51 through 53. Tam. Antu Bhakasura. Apatanam.
Again endeavoring to attack him.
Saha. Lord Krishna. Nirgriya. Capturing. Tundayoho. By the beak. Dorbyam, with his arms. Bakam, Bakasura. Kamsasakam, who was the friend and associate of Kamsa. Satampatihi, Lord Krishna, the master of the Vaishnavas. Pashyatsu, while observing. Baleshu, all the cowherd boys. Dadara, bifurcated. Lilaya, very easily. Muda Avaha, this action was very much pleasing. Virana Vat, like the grass called Virana, as it is bifurcated. Devokasam, to all the denizens of heaven. Translation. When Krishna, the leader of the Vaishnavas, saw that the demon Bakasura, the friend of Kamsa, was endeavoring to attack him, with his arms he captured the demon by the two halves of the beak, and in the presence of all the cowherd boys, Krishna very easily bifurcated him, as a child splits a blade of Virana grass. By thus killing the demon, Krishna very much pleased the denizens of heaven. Who else died like this? Jarasandha. Except there he started from the feet.
Here.
There, Bhima started from the feet. He pressed down one leg and he pulled the other leg and he pulled up. Whereas here, Krishna's splitting him from the mouth, the beak, yeah. Okay, text 52. At that time, the celestial denizens of the higher planetary system showered Malika Pushpa, flowers grown in Nandana Kanana, upon Krishna, the enemy of Bakasura. They also congratulated him by sounding celestial kettle drums and conch shells and by offering prayers. Seeing this, the cowherd boys were struck with wonder. So why were the cowherd boys so surprised?
Because they're in Vatsalya.
They're like, well, what's all this? Wow, the demigods are honoring Krishna?
I mean, you know, it's like, it's just
disturbing their mood.
Yeah, well, it's like if I come in the temple room and you're talking to Modi or something, I'm like, wow, Drista's friends with Modi? Wow. I didn't know that about him. So it's like they're all like...
About Modi.
What? I didn't know that about Modi.
Who's Modi?
The Prime Minister of India. The Prime Minister of India. So the Cowherd boys were struck with wonder that these demigods are worshiping their friend. It's like, I didn't know the demigods were interested in my buddy, you know. Text 53. Just as the senses are pacified when consciousness and life return, so when Krishna was freed from this danger, all the boys, including Balarama, thought that their life had been restored. They embraced Krishna in good consciousness, and then they collected their own calves and returned to Vrajabhumi, where they declared the incident loudly. Purport. It was the practice of the inhabitants of Vrajabhumi to compose poetry about the incidents that occurred in the forest when Krishna performed his different activities of killing the asuras. They would compose all the stories in poetry, or have this done by professional poets, and then they would sing about these incidents. Thus it is written here that the boys sang very loudly. So here we're seeing, this is Krishna killing Bakasura, and the reactions of the demigods, and the reactions of the cowherd boys. Tomorrow we'll go to the reactions of the cowherd men. So rasa with Krishna is all about five elements. Sometimes we talk about rasa as just one of the five. We use rasa as a shortcut for all five. But actually, all five have to be included. Sometimes it's like that. We use the word mind sometimes as a shortcut for the whole subtle body. So sometimes we talk about the subtle body as mind, intelligence, and ego. And in that case, we have mind as an element of the subtle body. And other times, we just say mind, meaning the whole subtle body. So we sometimes use the word rasa as a shortcut for just one element of rasa, all five elements, and sometimes we talk about the elements. No, that wasn't right. Sometimes we use rasa referring actually to one of the five elements of rasa, and sometimes we use rasa referring to all five together. So we in the Krishna Consciousness Movement are interested in reviving our rasa with Krishna. Yes? That's right? Yeah, I was just hearing Prabhupada say this morning how this relationship we have with Krishna, it's already present. It's not something, this is the verse, of course, by Rupa Goswami, that this love for Krishna is not something to be gained from another source. It's something that's already within us. It's just a question of awakening it. And Prabhupada this morning in the class that I was listening to from Chaitanya Charitamrita was speaking also about our good qualities, that all of our good qualities are already there. Our whole nature as a holistic thing is already there. So how are we going to revive this relationship with Krishna that already exists? Right, like Jesus gives the parable of the prodigal son, where the son leaves home and then he comes back, and when he comes back, he restores the relationship that had already existed. So one of the ways that we revive this relationship is by hearing about Krishna and his relationships with his devotees. As we hear about Krishna and his relationships with his devotees, we get some idea of how we are going to revive our own relationship with Krishna and what does it mean to have a relationship with Krishna. Because, you know, all over the world, in every religion, people talk about love of God. You know, anyone who considers himself religious or even spiritual, they all talk about love of the divine or love of the universe, or isn't it? Love of the light or love of God. But without knowing anything about God and without knowing anything about how he relates to his devotees, reviving our love of God is extremely difficult. I mean, assuredly it can happen. You can be in a religious system where they don't know much about God. and just by your sincerity in Kripa City, it can happen. But generally, one has to have Janma Karma Chime Divyam Eva Myoveti Tatvata Twakta Deham Punarjama Eti Nati Mam Eti Sorjuna. One has to have some tattva. One has to understand these things. So therefore the Srimad Bhagavatam is there. And here we're seeing that the demigods are relating with Krishna in one way and the cowherd boys are relating with Krishna in one way. But there's some similarities between that relationship. And understanding how they're relating with Krishna is very relevant to us in the Hare Krishna movement today and how we relate with Krishna and how we bring out our original relationship. So here we see the demigods. They're showering flowers. They're playing celestial instruments. Right? What are they playing? Celestial kettle drums. Anika Shanka Samstavahai. So Anika is some kind of drum. Shanka is, of course, a conch shell. When I visited Manipur, the devotees there who are... The main religion in Manipur is Gaudiya Vaishnavism, but Gaudiya Vaishnavism in the line of Narottama Das Thakur. And during the kirtans, they play conch shell as an instrument. So they'll have two big, great big conch shells, like is described when Krishna entered Dwarka, and they blew this fat conch shell. So they play these two really fat conch shells and hold both of them by their mouth and go back and forth between the two conch shells. So they're playing conch shells as musical instruments. We use the conch shell more as like a bell, you know, like an announcement, isn't it? Artik is started, artik is ended. We don't really use it so much as an instrument. But the demigods use it as an instrument. So they're playing these instruments, drums and conch shells, and they're also offering prayers. Right? And we see the cowherd boys, they're embracing Krishna. So rather than showering flowers, they're embracing him. And then they're walking with him. So instead of being above him showering flowers, they're hugging him and they're walking with him. And instead of offering prayers, what they're doing is they're making up poetry. And then they're singing the poetry. So we have... this element of music is in both, but it's quite different how they're doing it. So the demigods are much more formal. Yes? They're much more formal in their, you know, they're offering prayers. We don't have the cowherd boys offering prayers. Now the elements of prayers is that there's glorification, and then as Prabhupada says, you always ask for a benediction. So when you glorify someone, you're showing that they're above you. Yeah? At least the way the demigods are doing it. Of course, we may praise our students and our children also, but that's a little different. And there's a little different mood which we can usually pick up on, isn't it? If someone's glorifying us from the point of view of a superior to encourage us, and when someone's glorifying us as that we're the superior. So they're glorifying Krishna as a superior, and asking for benedictions is something you do from a superior. And such is understood differently today in different cultures of the world. One of the demarcations between different cultures is what we call power distance by the researchers. I tend to look at it as hierarchical cultures versus egalitarian cultures. But what's understood in sociology as power distance is to what extent there's deference and reverence to somebody because of their position. You understand? When someone has a title, when someone has a position, how much do you show them special honor, special regard, special worship? And different cultures of the world have bigger or shorter power distances between authorities and subordinates. Just like in Sweden, at one point, they brought in royalty from France to become their king. So the French royalty became the king of Sweden. And he tried to address the parliament in Swedish, but he made some mistakes and everybody laughed. And after that, he was very offended and never tried to speak Swedish again. Because in Sweden, they have a very short power distance. And so they treat authorities more like equals. But in France, they have a bigger power distance. and they treat authorities with more deference. Right? We have this difficulty between American culture and Indian culture. In Indian culture, there's a much bigger power distance between authorities and subordinates than there is in America. Yes, and it sometimes causes some misunderstanding when the cultures are combined. So the demigods are asking a benediction from Krishna because they see him as superior. They see that they're dependent on him, that without his giving them something, they can't get it. You know, that although the demigods are so powerful, the other day in a class I heard Prabhupada call it unlimited power. Although the demigods are so powerful, still they're very aware that without Krishna they can't do anything. And it's interesting because here Krishna is looking like a human child. You know, Krishna is not here looking like God. He's not looking like Vishnu. He's looking like a little boy. And still the demigods are very conscious that he's in that position. But they're also, as we noted, they're engaged in music, although it's very formal music. And the cowherd boys, on the other hand, their relationship with Krishna is as a peer. They give him a hug. So we find, particularly in the culture that existed at the time of Krishna's appearance in India, that you hug equals. I mean, obviously you hug your children as well, but the idea of embracing somebody is something that was done primarily between equals. Like we find when Krishna would visit the Pandavas, he would offer respects to Yudhisthira, he would embrace Bhima and Arjuna, and Nakul and Sahadev would offer obeisances to him. So the cowherd boys are like, yeah, well done, well done, well done, you know. And then they're not asking him for any benedictions. The cowherd boys are not going to Krishna and say, oh, Krishna, please give us this, Krishna, please give us that, because they're just seeing that he's their buddy. And they're walking along with him. And although they're making music, in a much more informal way. They're making up their own little songs. Right? Like we might do if we're with our friends. We might make up some funny little songs. It's also very interesting that the cowherd boys are perceiving that Krishna's freed from a danger. They're saying, oh, Krishna was in danger. Right, when they're seeing that Krishna was freed from this danger, thus released, muktam. Muktam baka asyat. Oh, Krishna's safe, Krishna's safe. So this is not the mood of the demigods. The mood of the demigods is, yes, our boss killed another demon. Wonderful, wonderful. You know, of course, the demigods do get sometimes frightened when Krishna appears to lose to the demons. You know, they're... When Varaha was fighting with Hiranyaksha and Varaha's mace fell down, the demigods became worried. Or with Hiranyakashipu, when Lord Nrisingadev let Hiranyakashipu slip from his hand, the demigods were like, oh no, now we've taken the side of Nrisingadev, but now Nrisingadev's going to lose and Hiranyakashipu is going to harass us even more that we took the wrong side. You know, so they were afraid of their own positions. But generally speaking, the mood of the demigods is that they know that Vishnu is all supreme, they know he's superior, and they're not really worried that he's in any kind of danger. They're just happy that, okay, he did another heroic activity. But the cowherd boys, actually, they're worried, they're concerned that my friend is in trouble. And therefore, oh, you got out of that. Whoa. And as we'll see tomorrow, the cowherd men will say, thank God. Thank God you were saved. It's due to the mercy of God that you were saved. So this is quite a difference in their relationship. And we find there's an example given in the Nectar Devotion that Patri, one of Krishna's servants, that when the cowherd boys were laughing with Krishna, he started to laugh, and then he's like, oh no, no, that's not proper for me. I'm a servant, I shouldn't be laughing like a friend. And so he stopped his laughter. And these differences in relationship, they're according to the personal taste of the devotee. And as I was saying, the one of the five elements of rasa that we sometimes just call rasa is called sthaibhav. Sthai means to stay. So the mood that is always there. So the cowherd boys always have this mood of friendship. Of course, the demigods are not in their sty bhav. The demigods are in some level of progression of Krishna consciousness. But there are devotees who have an eternal sty bhav of more reverence. Even the servants in Goloka have more of a reverential mood. And of course, among the cowherd boys, some of the cowherd boys have more of a parental mood, some have more of an equal mood, some have more intimacy, and some have more reverence. And this activity that they're doing, this is called the anubhav. Anubhav is how you express your sthaibhav. So there can't be rasa without, first of all, having some basic feeling. I'm your friend, I'm your lover, I'm your parent, I'm your servant. There has to be some, that sambandha, that basic, but it's a feeling that I have this relationship with you. And then we act on that feeling. If I say I'm your friend, but I never intentionally do any activities of friendship with you, then there can't be rasa. So these activities, the demigods acting basically as servants, and the cowherd boys acting as friends, they do something. They shower flowers, they say prayers, they play instruments, they embrace him, they walk with him, they make poetry. So there's some activities that are done. Then there's also, we'll talk about in the next classes, the next days, about the sattvika bhavs and the vyabhichari. Well, here we can talk a little bit about the vyabhichari bhavs. So vyabhichari bhavs are the emotions that are transient. So like the cowherd boys have this is shmire, they have this sense of wonder, like you were saying, it disturbed their relationship. But wonder is one of the seven secondary sthaibhavs. And when they see the demigods praising Krishna, they go into the sense of wonder. They don't always have a sense of wonder about Krishna. It's not that when you're friends with someone, you don't always feel a sense of wonder about them. Sometimes you do, and sometimes you don't. So when Krishna does something wonderful, and when he's praised by the demigods, the cowherd boys feel wonder. And when they're embracing him, you can see they have this sense of like camaraderie, right? And then they're taking care of the cows together. So these are shifting and changing emotions. So we have this basic emotion of sthaibhav, we have anubhav, what we do to express that emotion. Then vyabhichari bhavs, we have the shifting and changing different waves of emotions that come and go within that relationship, right? And then we have the vibhav, what stimulates that relationship. And here what's stimulating that relationship is Krishna's heroic activities and Krishna being in danger and Krishna getting out of danger, where again we see some of the vyabhichari bhavs, where the cowherd boys felt afraid. You know, in the material world, fear is our huge problem. Attachment, fear, and anger. It's a huge problem. Fear is one of the main emotions that separates us from Krishna. Therefore, Krishna is always telling the devotees, don't be afraid. Something he's, oh, you know, Master John, don't be afraid, don't worry, don't have anxiety. The whole basis of Vaikuntha is to be free from anxiety. But there's a kind of rasa of fear. There's a sthaibhav of fear. And so the cowherd boys were afraid. And then they're relieved. It says here, like the senses are pacified when consciousness and life return. So it's like, we're okay. Krishna's okay. You know. So these are the changing emotions. And again, the impetus for that is Krishna's activity, Krishna being swallowed by Baka, Krishna being spit up by Baka, Krishna bifurcating Baka. These activities are acting as a stimulus for all of these relationships and feelings. The fifth one is sattvika bhava, which we're not going to talk about today. So how they're expressing their anubhavs, their activities of expression, we're going to look at music and poetry. So one of the main ways that a relationship with Krishna is expressed throughout the scriptures and through all history is in music. And in fact, we see that in the religious traditions of the world, music plays a very important role. Now, there are some religious traditions that forbid instrumental music. I'm sure you're familiar. Or have forbidden it in the past. There certainly in the Middle Ages, there was a time when people didn't play any musical instruments in worshiping the Lord, only the human voice. But whether or not musical instruments are allowed, some sort of music is there. Even in the most austere religious systems where no musical instruments allowed and no dancing is allowed, there are religious traditions like that today. Singing in praise of the Lord is part of the religious tradition. So this, the concept of music, right? And music is very essential, not only to human beings, but even in the animal kingdom. Like the way the whales talk to each other is a kind of music, isn't it? They're singing to each other. And even the sounds that are made in the animal kingdom, in the insect kingdom, is all related to music. And music is one of the main ways in which we as human beings experience and express emotions, and one of the main ways that we connect emotionally with other people. Isn't that a fact? You know, when people are sad, they want to listen to the blues, or they want to sing the blues. You know, when you're sad, you want to hear sad music. Aren't you all like that? Right? When you're sad, you want to hear something meditative and slow and something that matches your mood. Or when you're, you know, or you want to sing something like that. We look at these songs of the Acharyas, and they have these songs. Some of them are just like aching, right? And longing. And some of them are just... Some of them are this kind of exuberance. And so we use music to express our different moods, and we use music to sort of mirror our different moods and connect with other people in our different moods to express things. And Krishna, of course, does this as well. So Krishna is the consummate musician. It says that even the speaking of God and the speaking in the spiritual world is musical. We can hear this a little bit with some languages, especially the South Indian languages sound very musical to me. Whenever I hear someone speaking in a South Indian language, it sounds to me as if they're singing. So Krishna is always engaged in singing and dancing and playing instruments. The gopis, the cowherd boys, they're all musicians. Yes? Yeah, I know Krishna. I'm sure he plays more instruments than a flute, but he does play a flute. And again, Radharani, I'm sure she can play many, many different instruments, but she plays a lute. We know that one of the gopis, Saibya, she also plays a flute. So there's, you know, each resident, they have their favorite musical instruments. But again, I'm sure that they have a whole rep. I'm sure Krishna can play any instrument that exists. If there's an instrument, he can play it. And, of course, he has many different kinds of flutes. And there's many different kinds of dancing. So sometimes Krishna does a peacock dance, you know, which Shivaram Maharaj described. It must be a little funky, a peacock dance. You say, it must be something like break dancing that we see. So there's different kinds of dancing. Also different moods and different ragas and different talas. And we even see with traditional Indian dancing, there's Bharatanatyam. There's also Odissi, there's the Manipur style of dancing, there's Kathak dancing. So I'm sure in the spiritual world there's unlimited different types of dancing. Here we have different genres of music. We have, you know, jazz music, rock music, classical music. But I'm sure, again, they have unlimited genres of music. And one of the main components of the spiritual world is this music. Music and singing and dancing and songs. And one of the main ways that this love for Krishna, the relationship with Krishna, is expressed, and one of the main ways that it's also developed. And of course, in the Krishna consciousness movement, our movement is based to a large extent on music. It's definitely one of the primary components of our system, isn't it? Yes? Anybody disagree with that?
Yes.
So, you would disagree that music? You don't think so?
No, I agree.
Okay.
I was shaking again.
Okay. You were doing Indian shake. I couldn't quite figure out which way it was going. So music, it's one of the main things in our Hare Krishna movement. singing the Hare Krishna mantra, playing musical instruments, dancing. That was the primary way that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spread Krishna consciousness, was through music and dancing and song. And we have so many songs of the acharyas. And then poetry. So, of course, there's a connection between poetry and music, that so many musical songs, some of them are just instrumental. So, for sure, in the spiritual world, some of the music is just instrumental. Nobody's singing anything. They're just listening to instrumental music or just listening to instrumental music and dancing. But also, there's music with lyrics. And the lyrics to music is generally poetic. Generally. When you have music with lyrics, there's some sort of rhythm, there's some sort of meter, there's some sort of rhyme, there's some sort of literary ornaments. And this combination of music and poetry creates something that's very pleasing. Again, practically everybody likes music with lyrics. And it's one of the main ways to remember things, which is why the cowherd boys are putting Krishna's pastimes into poetry and then singing that poetry very loudly. Srila Prabhupada speaks about this, or writes about this, in the 9th chapter, I believe, of the 10th canto with Mother Yasoda, that Mother Yasoda, while she's churning butter, she's singing about Krishna's pastimes. And the same point that's made here, that she would make Krishna's pastimes into poetry and then sing it, or sometimes hire someone else to do it. Hey, can you make a... There were professional poets, and they'd make songs about Krishna, which then could be sung. And, of course, as I was saying, in the spiritual world, their speaking sounds like music. Because if something's very poetic, even if you don't sing it, it has a musical quality to it. And, of course, the vast majority of the verses of the Bhagavatam and all the verses of the Bhagavad Gita are in poetry. And some of the poetry is quite astonishing. You know, if you really analyze the assonance and consonance and the rhyme and the meter and the, all the different literary ornaments of the... We had Hari Parshad here some time ago who gave a class on poetry. And if you really analyze that, a lot of the poetry of the Shastra is amazing. And the literature written by our acharyas is also often written in poetry. Which, you know, if you're thinking that these verses here in the Bhagavatam were spoken by someone, you know, for me to write poetry, I have to really work at it. It doesn't just flow. Like Keshava Kashmiri had that poetry just flow, the 100 verses. But for most of us, we want to write poetry, you have to really focus on it. But in the Bhagavatam, they're just speaking poetry. So their speaking sounds like a song. So for us to enter into our relationship with Krishna, certainly music and poetry is very helpful. One of the 26 qualities of a devotee is kavi, is being very poetic. Yes? And of course, if we can't write our own music and we can't write our own poetry, at least we can delve into the music and the poetry of our acharyas and of the Lord himself. And sing those prayers and sing those activities of Krishna. But we have many, many devotees in our Krishna consciousness movement who've written their own poetry. And it's so interesting, you know, when you're reading Krishna book and then you think about like the songs that we would sing for the children about Krishna's pastimes. They were poeticized versions of the Krishna book so the children could remember. And this particular pastime is also Jamini, who passed away a year or so ago. She also made this into a song, into a poem, and into a song. And I think many of the adults in the movement just think that's for children. But actually, there's things that we can also do, that we can take these songs in English. You know, I was just at a meeting about BBT editing, and Dravida Prabhu was there. And so at one point, they asked us each to sing a verse, and Dravida Prabhu, you've all heard him, right? Where he has... taking the translations and put it into poetry and song and singing like that. So this is a way that we can express our emotions for Krishna, that we can develop our relationship with Krishna, is through music and through poetry. And it's a way that these things naturally evoke emotions, even materially. So how much more do they do that on the spiritual level?
when they're about Krishna. So questions, comments, additions, subtractions.
You were saying about how we're reviving you were saying that we're reviving our relationship with Krishna.
Yes.
And of course, in our Gaudiya line, there's just certain rasas moods that we that are concentrated on. You know, our acharyas.
Yes.
Now we know there are other sampradayas, and so would it be an explanation of why there are different sampradayas? Because people have different innate rasas. In other words, South India, in Ramanujacharya's line, they're worshiping Narayan mostly. So.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, that's a theory. I've heard that posited, that people will naturally gravitate toward the sampradaya that resonates with their original rasa, even though they don't know it at the time that they're attracted. But our godbrother, Gaurakeshava Prabhu, who's very familiar with the Sri Sampradaya, he said that actually there's, the Alwars write considerably about Krishna and the gopis. And in all the sampradayas, in all the Vaishnava sampradayas, there is knowledge of Goloka and there's knowledge of the Madhurya Bhav, although there may be a focus more on something else. So like the Pushti Marg, they're focusing more on Vatsalya Bhav. Something that's particularly interesting is that Krishna's chief consort is not understood the same way in all the sampradayas. So, and in some of the Puranas, the rasa dance is described with Viraja in the center or with Rindadevi in the center. So that's also, or that there's many rasmandalas, and in each rasmandala somebody else is at the center. So that's also something quite interesting. We do see in our own sampradaya, although the six Goswamis are all Manjari gopis, not all of our acharyas are Manjari gopis. And we have members of our sampradaya in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's time who were absolutely fixed Rambhaktas, some of whom Mahaprabhu really glorified for being Rambhaktas. So even in our own Gaudiya Sampradaya, I mean, most of the associates of Lord Nityananda were cowherd boys, for example. So we do have, and we have a situation in our ISKCON where Srila Prabhupada confirmed to our god sister Yamuna that she was a follower of Mother Yasoda. So we do have a variety, I think, even within a sampradaya, even though the main mood of a particular sampradaya may be going in one direction or another. So I've not read anything authoritative on that people will end up joining a sampradaya that ends up resonating with their rasa. I mean, I've heard people say that, but I've heard people in ISKCON and other Gaudiya groups say that, but I haven't seen anything authoritative on that from our acharyas. And as I say, we do have evidence that in every sampradaya, people do have a variety of moods. This could be a very long discussion.